Hi, you're listening to Adrienne Barbeau and Quality Time Broadcast.
I'm just going to do it one more time.
Enough with the racism. And James Finn is a peach, and we
he
love
is.
Him to
He's
death.
He's literally
and
the sweetest human.
This recurring bit of calling James Finn a racist is funny. I'll give it to you.
I'm going to throw this out here. There's going to be a new song coming, and it's about James Finnessy,
otherwise
known as Supremacy of James Finn.
Jeremy,
so.
This is, oh gosh. Leave
not,
James
only,
Finn alone.
Not only
Leave
terrible
James Finn
and
alone.
Bullying, but
yeah.
a stretch.
Yeah.
When did you figure out what was bullying? It's just me having a good time. You guys can pick on Chris or Steve
I swear to
all
God,
you want.
We're T-minus till we get a I've been triggered email.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming.
It is.
It's fucking coming.
You're doing it to us, Jer. You're
and
doing
when
it
he
to
shoots
us.
Me with his AR-15, I'll be saying, thank you. Thank you for sending me back to hell. So.
So yeah, welcome to Quality Time, everybody. Yay!
Yeah, that was a really weird. So yeah,
that was a long. That. Yeah, that was a long
so,
one.
So I mean, yeah, because welcome to fucking Quality
I
Time.
To,
I guess.
Listen, my energy was high, and Jeremy and this fucking James Finn bitch just won't stop.
We call Jeremy the deflator.
He's going nonstop with it. We started with a good strong walrus dildo bit.
It's like if he took a titty with an implant, like a nice titty with a beautiful implant, and ran it over with a truck.
Ugh,
just
yeah.
flattened it out.
Yeah, like but, he's Adrienne Barbeau at the end of Escape from New York.
Between a cab.
So anyway, welcome back. My name is Eric Woodworth. Thank you so much for joining us once again, Quality Time. And that voice, that sultry voice you hear to my left is none other than the very lovely Miss Kimberly Ambrose.
So
how are
sultry,
you?
Sultry, making horn noises.
Yeah.
So hot right now.
Yeah.
Oh my
like,
God.
You're like a sexy tuba.
If I had a nickel for every time I'd been called that.
That would be an awesome name for a band, Sexy Tuba.
Sexy Tuba? That is a good one. And
that's what the Mighty Mighty Boss Tone should have been called.
Yeah, Sexy Tuba?
Totally.
Fuck Tuba. Yeah.
Like, Pinstripe Tuba?
This is songs to get off to your trombone to. And that's the voice to my right is none other than my blood, my brother, the man who makes this Quality Time so quality. Everybody, give it up for Jeremy Woodworth. Jeremy here tonight. Yes.
Don't know who you're talking about.
Oh, who are we joined with tonight?
Tonight it's James Hong. You know who? I made your eyes. I just do eyes.
You just do eyes?
I do eyes. You know.
Okay.
Oh, it's like
whether
that.
You're Rutger Hauer or maybe a you know, a replicant.
It's like that song, Hush Hush, Eyes to Eyes.
Mm.
Yeah, I remember. I know how it works.
The eyes
that was,
of the
that was kind of a deep cut. That was kind of a good pull
yeah,
out there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You
wasn't
pulled
too
in
bad.
Deep for that. I appreciate that.
I love Blade Runner, and I love the new Blade Runner as well. So.
The new Blade Runner is fun. The new Blade Runner is a lot of fun.
And a great part for Sean Young in that.
Hell
so.
Yeah. Oh, Cam, I forgot to bring this up. I actually meant to bring this up episodes and episodes ago, and I realized that by the time you're listening to this Quality Timers, it is well into April. March Madness is over. But. When Jeremy and I's grandmother died recently, last month.
R.I.P.
It was in the heat of March Madness. And we started seating our family members in brackets of who's the next that's going to die.
Okay.
And Jeremy.
Death pool.
Jeremy's a solid top four seed of like in the death pool right now.
Okay. Wow. That's
like,
impressive.
But like a seed that's could easily upset a number one right away. Like he could really move up in the brackets to get that coffin
spot. I'll
tell
you something that's a garen fucking tea.
Yeah.
No matter what funeral home you call to get his body, they're going to be mad at you. He's a big dude.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm getting a little bit scared now so that when I go out to eat my fast food, instead of getting my normal three double Big Macs or three double Whoppers, and the 20-piece McNuggets, I'll actually get a Diet Coke instead of a
well,
regular
yeah,
Coke.
Well, yeah, because you don't want to be like a fatty
right.
about it.
Because I'm trying to be more healthy.
I love that Tenacious D yeah. skit when he's like, I'm trying to watch my figure.
Half regular, half diet. Yes, that's a great bit. That's a great bit.
You mean that Jack Black made a joke like mine? Damn him!
Yeah, yeah. You know, we had a discussion about who's on the Mount Rushmore of all the funny musical comedians. Mm-hmm. Rob and I did. Mm-hmm. And
it's a good one.
I couldn't find space for Tenacious D. I couldn't do it.
Who goes above that for you?
Here was my Mount Rushmore. Okay. I had to put Weird Al right away.
Sure.
Weird Al has cemented
Absolutely.
Himself yeah. at the top spot.
He's the Washington looking away.
Now, one of the more important ones that I feel is overlooked. I put the Smothers Brothers in there.
That's really good.
The Smothers Brothers are, I mean, if
you just got a respect notch on my belt.
Exactly. So those are two solid spots. So already mm-hmm. Tenacious D can't bump any of those. Mm-hmm. This one, I feel like you would say that Tenacious D would bump this next one.
Okay.
But I, in my personal opinion, and I think in the opinions of a lot of people, he's very, very funny. Stephen Lynch. Stephen Lynch is fucking amazing.
Wow.
Music-wise.
I kind of can't say it bumps it, but I can see why you would think that.
So, I mean, I could see how you would bump Stephen Lynch.
I pretty much think you are Stephen Lynch Jr. So
I enjoy the comedy
He's
stylings
funny.
Of Stephen Lynch.
I don't even think Stephen Lynch has made an abortion song.
And then honestly, my other one, there's no way you bump them. I mean, it's Monty Python. Monty Python. How are you going to bump?
If you're going to be more specific, you'd say Eric Idle. Because he probably did all the songs.
Well, then I could just get
other than
Eric
Neil
Idle.
Innes.
Yeah, Neil Innes. I mean, but you can't bump Monty Python.
You can't.
You can't. You Tenacious D can't bump them. Now you could say Tenacious
Fuck.
D could maybe bump Stephen Lynch, but I'd say it's hard.
Yeah,
I'd say it's hard.
That one goes down to personal preference because what you have is an absolute homage.
Yeah.
Up until Stephen Lynch, and then mm-hmm. it gets a little. More personal preference.
But then, and then after that, when you're talking about the Tenacious D's, I mean, you're bringing in the Lonely Island. The Lonely Island's really funny.
There
funny,
are
but
Jews
not as prolific.
In the world. There yeah. are Buddhists.
Yeah.
There are so Hindus good. And Mormons, and then.
Oh, you know what? I actually will change my list for one other comedic duo that's probably the funniest of all that bumps Stephen Lynch and Tenacious D out of there.
Wow.
It's the South Park guys. I mean, it's...
Oh, you're so
Matt Stone
right
and
about
Trey
that.
Parker.
God
I mean,
damn, you're so
so
right about
So you got Matt
that.
Stone, Trey Parker.
Rushmore isn't enough.
Yeah.
And a close one would be Mel Brooks.
Yeah, I mean, Mel Brooks is really good, too.
My gosh, he just had a podgasm.
Oh, gosh.
Dude, I fucking love Mel Brooks. I was just watching Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. I avoided it for so long because I don't like to watch anything about comedy. And then I just was like, fuck it, I'm going to watch it. And I can't stop watching now, but I only watch the ones of the people that I like. And the one with Carl Rayner and Mel Brooks, I just wanted to stay there for hours and hang out with them and listen to them. I fucking love him so much.
This one goes out to James Finn. Springtime for Hitler and Germany.
Do. God, that's so great.
I am sorry. James Finn is not a racist.
James Finn is not racist.
Deutschland is happy and gay.
He loves all blacks.
Yeah.
But not Jews.
But he hates himself some faggots, let me tell you.
Oh,
and I'm
God.
Just kidding. I'm just, again, James
it.
Finn is total. He is the moniker of most kind man in the whole
he
world
is. That's
and
why
accepting.
It's funny.
So, yeah, he doesn't
sorry.
Deserve this.
Except
James.
He ate a puppy once.
Listen, I want you to know this is Jeremy's idea for a bit, not me.
Yeah.
I want you, that's the first thing I want to say to James Finn.
I keep
out there.
Pushing James Finn until he kills me.
Yeah. Don't fuck with the master of time and space. You're going to get
How
fucked.
How cute would James Finn's picture look on an episode of Snapped. You know what I mean? Like,
what did they say about every psycho killer? He was a quiet man.
He was the nicest
well,
guy.
Well, you know, one guy kept bullying him, though. All right. of a sudden, he snapped and he fucking killed that guy. So
that is true.
I'm Rob Meyer. Sorry.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that. Anyway, tonight we are joined with another John Carpenter-based directed,
the Carpenter
written.
Series.
Classic.
I call it a classic. No,
a goddamn classic.
I have very warm and fuzzy feelings about this movie.
I hate
up.
To say I love the soundtrack beginning of this even better than the other one.
This song.
If you can't work out to this, you're fucking not American. Like.
So tonight's movie is Big Trouble in Little China.
Step, step, step.
By the
step.
Way, Jeremy, have you ever seen this, the actual music video for it?
No. Wow. You can feel the wind.
Fucking Sonny Bono.
That's John Carpenter on vocals.
That's Chuck Connors. Oh my gosh.
Wow.
We better run. Run it through the mystic night.
Look at the moment of this guy.
Take us away. Take us away.
Written by the kids who want to be kidnapped.
I'm sorry, these guys kind of make the guys from Red Rider look like Kiss. So.
Oh man, what a magical song and intro, guys.
Wow.
Yeah. So yeah, 1986, Big Trouble in Little China,
hey,
guys.
Here's trivia for you.
Yeah.
Do you know how many dudes got pussy to that song?
I'm gonna go under five. Under
the
five.
Answer is zero. You are right about that.
Yeah. It was less than five.
Less than
all
five.
Right. Yeah, nobody fucks to that song. And no. As much as I tout, even in our last episode and in past episodes, about John Carpenter's great songwriting ability, this is one of them. This is one of his songs, and I can't. It is indefensible about how fucking bad this song is.
What are the chances that he does play this live on his tour? So.
If it does, if he opened with this, I would pop. I'd pop for it.
Like, I paid $200 like, for this.
So cut to you and like the Beatles, like fans. Like,
it was really funny. I was watching clips of like somebody had cell phoned the John Carpenter thing. So what he does is he actually plays parts of the movie in the background while he plays the music with like a full band. And there's this one part where they're watching Attack on Precinct. What is it? Precinct 17? Is that
13?
Attack on Precinct 13. Well, there's one part
Such
where a little
fun movie.
Where a little girl gets shot in that movie, and it's kind of brutal. It's like a little tiny girl, and the whole crowd goes, "Yeah!" Like, and I know that if I was there, I would have cheered along with them as this
was
little girl
it
gets
like
blasted.
John Carpenter performs live Babysitters Getting Free. Like,
yeah,
what was this?
Yeah, it was awesome, is what it was.
It's just the sweetest little scene where it's like, I want the lemon twist. Sure. Just blowing it away. It kind of almost as bad as the kid getting run over in the Toxic Avenger on his bike.
Yeah, it's so. Up there with like brutal.
Oh, look,
kid
he got run
things.
Over, but he's still alive. No, no full points. Have to run over his head with the tires. So, gosh.
So, again, so this year, 1986, was actually a really blockbuster year for films. So, one movie that this movie actually was kind of a commercial flop in the box office because it came out 2 weeks before the movie Aliens. And Aliens was going
through. No competition
through.
There.
Aliens was a huge movie that year. There was tons and tons of advertising that had already been out. And people were in Aliens mania at the time. And truthfully, that this movie wasn't really, you know,
good?
It's rumored, at least what I read about, what Carpenter says is that they didn't really put the right advertising behind it for this movie. This is also one of the last movies that Carpenter ever did for under studio direction. All of his movies after this would be done independently, and he would have Universal distribute them. But this was this is still when the big wigs at 20th Century Fox were pulling the strings. So.
I think he's also downplaying the fact that this actually is a very niche movie.
It is. Well, it's really weird. So this movie came out in 1986, and it's about Chinese mysticism. It has Kurt Russell really not being the main character in it.
And not
he's
really
more of
being
a
tough guy.
Yeah.
He's not good at stuff.
He's a dunce in this movie almost. And part of that was Carpenter was like, he didn't want to do a stereotypical thing where it's a white Caucasian saving the day and Asian guy as the sidekick.
Maybe you should have, buddy.
So
he
flipped it. But yeah, but I mean, this had casting issues and stuff like that. I mean, you know who was supposed to play the role of Wang in this movie? Like the
An
main
actual dick?
Yeah, well, it was actually, he wanted to cast Jackie Chan in the part. And how much differently would this movie be if Jackie Chan was in it with them? I mean, we'd have like multiple more Big Trouble in Little Chinas right now.
Or maybe we would have got a sooner Rush Hour.
Yeah, or a sooner Rush Hour. A lot of things. I mean, he had just done Cop Story, and Carpenter had watched that the year before. And we were like, this is a great movie. I need that guy. But the studio didn't like Jackie Chan. They didn't think his English was strong enough to be in the movie.
I hate to say a second good would have been Wanted Not Nobby from 16 Candles would have probably been better than this guy.
Yeah. Now, another interesting fact. Fun little trivia question. What movie, and this is a movie that is one of my favorites, Jeremy, came out the same year, did Kurt Russell turn down the lead in to be in Big Trouble in Little China?
Wow. I'm already at wow.
And
really?
I'll let you know, this is one of my... the movie
say,
that turned
Die Hard.
No, not Die Hard. This is one of my favorite movies, though. I'll let you know.
Well, no, because he didn't kill himself, so obviously it's not Die Hard.
Mm-hmm. He kills himself?
No, he would have if he turned down Die Hard to do this.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm too tired.
Die Hard, you got a guess, Kim?
Turned down to do this.
Yeah.
And what year?
It's 1986. This is when the movie dropped. Turned down this lead role.
Oh, my God. What if he would have been the principal in The Breakfast Club?
Oh, shit. That would have been pretty dope.
Pretty amazing.
How much would you have wanted to fuck that principal?
Already like, thinking about
his
it.
Biceps?
Already thinking about it.
So you're both wrong. No. Kurt Russell turned down the lead role of Connor McLeod in the movie Highlander.
Oh, my God.
Highlander. He could have been Highlander. And by the way, my only criticism of Highlander is how ridiculous fucking Lambert is as the Highlander. Like, that is really my only criticism of the first Highlander
movie. I could
see
him as a very short Highlander, but a very dedicated Highlander.
God, he would be so good.
What's the matter? You want a date?
What's you a faggot, Nash? Why are you cruising for a piece of ass? Can't you see I'm a Frenchman that is also fucking Irish, fucking Scottish.
The Scottish like, Frenchman.
The Scottish
yes.
French. The whole premise is ridiculous. Like, he has a fucking French accent.
Look, he speaks all languages. It's just his French.
God,
was the longest in the time of France.
I've never seen
him. Him and Roger Daltrey. So.
I love the Highlander series. That's one of my favorite things. I'd love for it to get rebooted. I would be first in line to rewatch it. So this movie opens up actually with a monologue by the character Egg Shen, who's played by Victor Wong. So I have a little bit of audio from Egg Shen opening up the movie to Big Trouble, setting the scene for Big Trouble in Little China.
What I'd like to do today is get your version of what happened.
Oh, you mean the truth?
Of course. First, just state your name and your occupation for the record.
Oh, Egg Shen, bus driver.
Bus driver, what kind of bus and where, please?
Oh, tour bus. Bus for tourists. San Francisco, Chinatown.
Thank you. Now, before we get to the meat of this thing, do you at the present time have any knowledge of the whereabouts of a Mr. Jack Burton or his truck?
Oh, God, will you leave him alone?
Mr. Shen, please. You could be.
I love that he's defending this white man. This bumbling white man.
Half a city block explodes in a ball of green flame. Green flame. I mean, so all the hell is.
You'll also notice
if you're protecting Jack Burton.
You leave Jack Burton alone.
Do you know how many people said that about OJ?
We are in his debt. Showed great courage.
Like a lot.
Okay, but if I'm going to be your attorney, there are a few things that I have to know that still don't make any sense to me, like. You really believe in magic?
You mean Chinese black magic?
Yes.
Oh, absolutely.
Are you still serious about this? And monsters and ghosts as well, I suppose.
Oh, sure. And sorcery.
And I suppose that you expect me to believe in sorcery as well.
Of course.
Why?
Because it's real.
How can I know that, Mr. Shen?
How?
Yes, how? Help me out here. Please. How?
Credit score's real. I don't believe in that.
Uh-oh. And he puts his hands apart. And he makes some lightning, bitch.
See? That was nothing. But that's how it always begins. Very small.
Best part is you don't see his feet are like really, really rubbing on the carpet with his shoes. So
he's just been causing static electricity to make that. I think it's a pretty cool intro to the movie. You know,
it's
it really
very
sets
cool.
the scene.
The only thing that's like not realistic about this, except for the whole thing, is that this lawyer is going, in order for me to represent you, I have to know something about. Just do what lawyers do, man. Just do what lawyers... You don't need to know shit. You don't ask them if they're guilty, if they did it.
Just be doing your lawyering
just
shit.
Just make shit up and prove it.
In fact, real lawyers actually want to know nothing about you.
Yes,
as
they do.
As little as about you as possible.
They say, for a dollar, you have confidentiality. This is my hourly rate. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
That's how that goes.
Now,
Wasn't this the judge from Ghostbusters 2?
No, he's... Is he the judge from Ghostbusters 2?
The one that's going to judge and he has the two ghosts flying around the courtroom.
I think so, but Jeremy, you're going to have to resort to the internet for that one.
I'm not going to.
Now,
let's keep it moving.
The Chinese characters come up right after here, and then it says Big Trouble in Little China. And the translation of the Chinese characters that come up on screen roughly translate to... Evil spirits make a big scene in little spiritual state.
Stop it.
I shit that. Listen.
Wow.
The internet wouldn't lie to me.
Wow.
I love
a joke with the foreign language of the movie when the greatest has to be Kentucky Fried Movie with a fistful of yen. When they first meet the evil kung fu master, he gives this whole diatribe while they're just watching him, and it's all about like, okay, this is a stupid movie I'm in, and then you know just go ahead and watch it. And he's actually explaining it in Chinese.
Yes, yes. So, anyway, next we get to meet our hero, or maybe anti-hero, or maybe protagonist.
Hero-esque?
Yeah, hero-esque. We get to see Jack Burton riding down the street, Mr. Kurt Russell in his 18-wheeler big rig driving down the street. And here's a little taste of the intro just so you can get a little sense of the Jack Burton character.
Like I told my last wife, I says, honey, I never drive faster than I can see. Besides that, it's all in the reflexes.
What a cop. He just sits there eating subs. And then shitting on people.
Just listen to the old Pork Chop Express and take his advice on a dark and stormy night, all right? When some wild-eyed, 8-foot-tall maniac grabs your neck, taps the back of your favorite head up against a barroom wall, and he looks you crooked in the eye, and he asks you if you've paid your dues. Well, you just stare that big sucker right back in the eye, and you remember what old Jack Burton always says at a time like that. Have you paid your dues, Jack? Yes, sir, the check is in the mail.
Oh man! So that's a little taste of the Jack Burton character.
Am I wrong? Am I wrong here, or is a CB radio so that truckers can communicate with each other to let them know if something wrong has happened?
Yeah, and he's dropping little fun.
Blocking the whole signal.
Yes,
dropping these anecdotal tidbits that really don't. They're not bits. They don't result in a punchline.
Yeah,
it's just him being like, "I'm the fucking man, and I eat ham sandwiches."
I like that he's literally Kenny Powers, right? Like
yeah.
He's walking around telling his life story about how important he is.
When I was watching this today, I kept picturing like a guy like with half his legs severed, just trying to reach the CB radio and finally reaching it and waiting for the right moment to be able to be like, hey, okay, so I'm on Route 30. All right.
All right, thanks, Jack. Jack, clear line. Switch to channel 2. Switch to channel 2.
So I said this to my first wife. I was like, guy, I'm bleeding out, like now.
Black Hawk, over. Black Hawk, I like, channel 2. Channel 2, Black Hawk. Over.
Big ham eater, I'm gonna need you to
I just want this whole CB radio scene to have another trucker being Wilford Brimley driving, and the scene ends with him saying, nobody trusts anybody anymore.
Well, God damn it, Clark. You can't trust Clark anymore. He's out of control.
He was alone with them dogs.
You gotta check him. You gotta check your diabetes as well. Because you never know.
Check your tire pressure.
Sometimes you gotta drink your own piss to see. I hate pricking my finger, so I actually shoot my dick juice right into my own mouth while I'm seated position.
Oh my God.
It's the easiest way to find out if your beatus is acting up.
You know the best way to ingest Quaker Oats? Anally. Just have it shoved up in there. You don't need to eat it. You still get all the protein.
I do love the idea of Wilford Brimley being paid to do trucker how-to videos first day on the job, and you gotta pull over, gotta check your tire pressure, gotta check your light switches, gotta check your turn signals, gotta check your windshield wipers. Okay, that's important.
Do you have anything to declare, like maybe some eggs that keep people young in a pool?
Jesus
Good
Christ.
Cocoon reference, Jeremy. I got it. If we get a batteries not included reference somehow thrown into this one, we'll have the trifecta.
We'll do my best.
We'll have the trifecta. So he then rolls up into Chinatown in San Francisco and starts hobnobbing with the locals. He ends up beating his friend Wang in dominoes, and Wang says, double or nothing.
He's beating his friend Wang.
I know when I wrote that, you guys were going to giggle. But Wang says, double or nothing if I can cut this bottle in half. He tries, and it fucks up and actually heads for Jack's face. And you learn that Jack has the reflexes of a cat and catches the bottle before it hits him in the face. And basically loses another grand to him. So Jack decides to drive him to go pick up some money. But first he wants him to take him to the airport so he can pick up his bride-to-be. And obviously Jack is very blown away by this. I mean, how you didn't even tell me you had a
you
bride-to-be?
You can afford a bride?
So how much did she cost? Wow, that's great. And he can't sleep or eat or drink without thinking about her. Wang blames not being able to cut the bottle in half because his soul is just up and down and out of flux right now. So at the airport, Jack sees who we will soon find out to be Gracie Law, played by Kim Cattrall, who up until now had been in really raunchy movies like Porky's 2 and Police Academy. So this is kind of a big step to like take her more into the mainstream out of that world. And then she would go on to play like one of the biggest whores in all of TV-dom on Sex and the City. So
can I say this is only two movies before City Limits?
Yeah.
And of course, that's another MST3K movie. But when I met John Deal, who was in that movie, he called it Shitty Limits.
Got him.
I have a weird thing with Kim Cattrall in this movie because I really, really like her in this movie. But she does, you can tell she's not playing to her personal potential. She's being the stereotypical action female, which is weird because as we discussed in the previous episode, at this time females were very like badass in movies.
I also feel like that she got to play a bit more of the comic relief role, and I think that's a little bit different than her lady at the time. Like, I couldn't name you how many comic relief women that are in action films, so I think it's a departure from the regular of the 80s at this point.
It is. It's weird. It's like she's being the stereotypical female, but she still plays a really intelligent, self-sacrificing lawyer who is the comic relief. Mm-hmm. She's very forthcoming with her opinions and her intellect, but she still plays that almost, I don't want to say subservient, but sort of, I don't know, that stereotypical woman role. But I just think she's the perfect person.
All before Murphy Brown had even come out yet. Yeah. I mean, this is just a magical... Jeremy wasn't ready for a Murphy Brown reference. It's very rarely I get to hurt Jeremy with a reference because he does nothing but bring up the most obscure things in the whole world. That one got him.
I'm going to find a way to get Night Court in here.
Okay.
Have you seen the Brent Spiner episode?
No.
Yes, otherwise known as Data. So,
Data.
Yes.
So anyway, so at the airport, they actually run into the some ne'er-do-wells. Go ahead and bump into our boy Jack, and Gracie warns him that those are the Lords of Death. What a badass name. I mean, like, you're just trying too hard to sound like real badass. Like, gang names are called things like, you know, like the Pagans, or like,
it's
you
one
know,
degree
the fucking,
off of being called the Mean Guys.
Yeah, the Bloods. They were like, what are we? We're the fucking Lords of Death, right? Like, it's a bit much. So the Lords of Death go after, head for this girl named Tara, who Kim Cattrall's character is there to pick up. But as they're going to grab her, Jack steps in. He intervenes and starts fighting these Chinese guys who start producing weapons all out of the woodworks. Like, immediately they like pull a baton on him. He's like, hey, where'd you get that? And they just beat the shit out of Jack almost instantly. Tara is actually able to get away, but instead of Tara, they grab Miao Yin, who is Wang's girlfriend, and now shit's going down.
When I saw his girlfriend that he's intending to marry, I was like, wow, she does not look Chinese. Like, she looks
yeah,
she looks like if there was a like an LA in China, like if it was like Los Angeles.
Yes.
Like
yes.
her bone structure and like her face. She's got that mixed breed thing yeah. going on. She's gorgeous.
She's very pretty and yeah. does not actually have green eyes. No. But neither does Kim Cattrall. And apparently, it's really funny rewatching this. I was watching it in the HD format. You can actually see the contact lenses Aww. That they're wearing like this. So I was like, oh, that's cute.
Are they as thick as like the Evil Dead contact lenses? Yeah, like the Tupperware?
Yeah, they're like Michael Jackson Thriller yeah. yellow ones. Yeah, it's aggressive.
Would have been easier to just do the World War II concentration camp experiments where they try to change twins' eye color, like injecting shit in there. This is also a scene that when you're watching this with a younger person, inevitably they're either going to quietly think to themselves and you're going to feel it, or they're going to say it out loud and you're going to have to explain, oh, this is a time before you had to take your shoes off at the airport. That's how they got in with samurai swords.
yeah it's ridiculous. You could smoke right where they're at people were smoking constantly
they indoors. Were smoking on the plane.
It was fun.
Yeah,
it was a fun
time. It was America.
You could have a big carry-on giant bottle of nitroglycerin back then yeah. you could take on. So
yeah, you could just have the word bomb written on a thing with fucking TNT and an Acme symbol. And they were like, what's in there? Looney Tunes memorabilia. They were like, put them through.
You could have a box that said bomb and they'd think there was something awesome in
it. It's like the Sonny Bono character. He has an actual bomb under his thing. And he's like, you look fine. And then attack the nun. It's like, let's shake her down.
Sir, does this box contain live animals? Are they fed? Get on the plane. Get your ass on the plane.
You don't.
They're just rabid ferrets.
Who am I kidding? We don't give a fuck what you bring on this plane. Yeah. Get on here, big guy.
In fact, bring all the shoes. Hey. Wear all the shoes.
Hey, here's your complimentary Glock and headphones. right. You know, send them on. We
peanuts,
have fun.
Peanuts, sharp objects. Anybody?
So Jack and Wang go and head in the.
Can we for a second?
Second Wang right. joke.
They head into Jack's big rig and pursue the Lords of Death, who have Miaolin. Next, we see Egg Shen driving his little tour bus through Chinatown, giving a nice little tour of the city. All of a sudden, he almost runs head-on collision with Jack's big rig as they're trying to track him down. They hang right into an alley where they see the first time we see Lo Pan, who's in plain clothes on the street, which is kind of odd because as we go on in the movie you find out like he's this weird ghost thing, but he can come as a ghost that looks like a fucking 8-foot tall demon guy, but also can just be a regular plain clothes guy on the street. It's a lot to handle.
He
right
came
here.
For the sorcery, he stayed for the basketball shorts.
So James Hung is Lo Pan in this movie. He parks the big rig and they're sitting there, and then all of a sudden they run into a funeral procession and a gang dressed in all white. The gang is called the Chang Sung, and all of a sudden they have a rival gang that shows up in the streets called the Wing Kung. And all of a sudden they just have a giant fucking shootout in the middle of the street. Like immediately they kill like 15 people on like between the two sides. Like it's pretty fucking crazy.
Oops, people are dead. Welcome to this movie.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Body count is rising real quick. Mm-hmm. Now,
didn't it seem the oddest thing? It's like, okay, these are a major crowd of Asians, and the first thing that they do is whip out guns like no other film you've seen. It's like, okay, I was expecting a karate fight. Instead, it's the big-ass gun battle.
Yeah,
so.
Huge gun fight. Just point-blank range shooting each other in the face. So, one thing that you might notice is that the rivalry between the Chang Sung and the Wing Kong Tongs is analogous to a famous rivalry between Hip Sing and the Leo Tongs. It's pretty funny because their names actually rhyme. In early 20th century New York City. So they are actually based off real Chinese gangs back in the day. Now, after the
gunfight... You don't do that here, okay?
Hey.
You can play joke, you can pee-pee and coke, you can't fucking do violence in the street, okay? Fuck out of here.
Now, after the gunfire stops, leaving dozens dead, they come out of the woodworks with poles, knives, and other weapons, and things escalate fucking quickly. For the next 3 minutes, there are tons of karate. Stabbing, arm breaking, leg breaking, and general window side. Like, every window on that street just gets fucking karate punched. people thrown through. It's fucking like Anderson Windows dream. And the salesman walks by and sees there's like, hey, so you could use some windows here right now. Hey, why don't we work on your siding too? Like, no,
I do. It's like need a whole alley. Let's just say that it's like an entire alley of Rowdy Roddy Piper's and David Keith's together. So.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what Jeremy is referencing is the movie They Live, also John Carpenter, which has one of the longest fight scenes up until that time that was ever recorded on camera. 12 cool. minutes. 12 minutes.
Hey, calling from your insurance company. So we've looked over your claim here. Your claim. And what you claim is that a bunch of voodoo ninjas appeared in the street and started kicking each other's asses. The only reason we can't accept this is because, bro, Chinese people don't use guns. So yeah, yeah, I can't make good on this claim, this alleged claim.
Yeah, like Chinese people invented the fireworks and had access to gunpowder. Are you out of your mind?
You're a dick. Get off my phone.
Please, stop being racist, sir. Anyway, that'll be $40. Next, all of a sudden, during the scrum, both sides stop when a puff of green...
Did you say a scrum?
Yeah, I said a scrum. I was allowed to. During the both sides stop, and then all of a sudden, a bunch of glowing green smoke appears, and three gentlemen appear in straw hats. One that can seemingly control lightning, because he comes down on a lightning bolt like he's Mary fucking Poppins. These three...
It's like if Mary Poppins and Raiden had a child.
Yeah, yeah. These are the three storms in the movie. Rain, wind, and... Or, Thunder, rain, and lightning. They're and the three storms. And these are actually total ripoffs from the movie Three Assassins, the Three Assassins in Kazuri Okami in 1973. And they have giant Raiden hats, which totally inspired the game Mortal Kombat. And that's not the only thing Mortal Kombat stole from this movie, inspiration from. They obviously stole the Raiden character from this movie. But also, Lo Pan is basically Shang Tsung, right? Like the Shang Tsung character.
Do we bring this full circle to Christopher? What's his name? Being Raiden from Highlander.
Yes, Christopher Lambert is also fucking Raiden in like, oh god.
My that nightmare. Shit is so ridiculous.
Yeah, how does he get these roles where, like, okay, oh, you know, do you know the one guy in the movie Training Day, right? You know the guy who's the badass Vato Loco guy who, like, almost shotguns Ethan Hawke in the thing, but he, you know, he realizes that he saved his niece earlier in the day?
Yes, yes, yes.
So that guy is actually some Polynesian gentleman, right? He plays a Mexican, but by the way, I never thought he was anything but a fucking Latino American in that movie. And he actually plays like different races. He plays some guy from New Zealand in another movie. He plays like an African, like he plays Pablo Escobar in a movie. I buy all of those roles and I'm like, that's his ethnicity. And I 100% believe it. Never have I been fueled by fucking Christopher Lambert. Nope. Not once.
Nope.
Have I
nope.
looked at him and I'd be like, no, that guy's French. He's yep. French as fuck.
He pulled up like, in a silver minivan and a polo shirt, and he was drinking a Natty Light, and he was like, I'm ready to be Chinese today. And they were like, I don't buy it, but sure.
If I needed an Indian character for a movie, I'd be like, should I get M. Night Shyamalan or that guy from Short Circuit?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So. Oh, that guy's totally white in Short Circuit.
I got three fucking words for you. The Last Samurai.
Yeah.
Okay. Disgraceful. Fucking ridiculous.
And where else does Mooney get his best jokes from movies like that? So,
by the way, this is another week that we made a Short Circuit reference because Johnny Five was mentioned in the Con Air yeah. episode. When God, that was so funny. Rob, his name is Angel 23. He was like, well, Johnny Five. Does that mean he only raped five toaster? God bless Rob Mayer again. So these newcomers come into the fray, and all of a sudden, both gangs start unloading on the newcomers, and it appears to be very ineffective. The three do a coordinated attack where they produce throwing knives, flip forward, and plunge them into the three gang members across from them, instantly killing them. They're pretty fucking badass, is what we gather, right?
Does anybody kind of think that maybe their hats really help them for like a Tesla effect of protecting them from their electricity?
Yeah, do you think so? That's what their Tesla coil hats?
Yeah,
is that what it is?
Maybe they are Tesla coil hats because Tesla would get in a big cage.
They're dry straw hats are going to protect them from lightning.
With iron or
you don't
something.
Know. You don't know what
I
it's
know.
Made out of.
The I know.
I'm pretty Listen, sure. I know a lot about Tesla. And he was working with big hats towards the end of his...
That was his thing?
Yeah, he's like, I think the newest thing is going to be big hats, and that's going to revolutionize the world. So.
No, what happened was is one of the people who actually got cut, he's in the deleted scenes, was none other than what's that actor's name again? The guy from Cannonball Run and
Burt Reynolds,
and he was just like after he got cut from the movie, he was just like, well, let me just work on like the costumes, and he's like, here's these hats, and like John Carpenter's like, what are these hats? He's like, oh, they're funny because they're bigger than regular hats right here.
I'm gonna go out on a limb and I'm gonna talk about my conspiracy theory that Tesla was killed because he found out how to weaponize giant hats to throw at people, just like in Mortal Kombat. So that's
every,
the real reason he died.
Every woman getting ready for Preakness is like, I want to match my outfit, and I want my hat to match my shoes, and in case there's a thunder fight, I will be protected.
Thunder fight. Oh, it's so good. So Wang tells Jack that we better get out of here. So Jack throws the rig into drive, and two of the big hat boys step aside while the other one flips over the rig altogether. Then a tall figure stands before the rig, dressed in green and red, beckoning Jack to come forward. And that is soon who we will learn is Mr. Lo Pan. Jack obliges this motherfucker, runs him clear over. He kind of falls underneath the vehicle. Wang screams. He goes, Jack, that was Lo Pan. Jack gets out to investigate. Lo Pan, unscathed, blinds Jack by opening his mouth and emitting like this light that literally just looks like dicks come out of his, like a light, like a dildo amount of light comes out of his both mouth and eyes.
Also my favorite Neil Diamond song, turn on your dick light, let it shine and blind a man who's a truck driver.
You don't apologize for that, Jeremy.
They I really love Neil Diamond. Sorry.
They flee down the street to find the Lords of Death on the next street, so they opt to jump through a window of a building. There they meet one of the good gang members, and they have a little brief interaction, but they're still being chased, so they run out of there. Ultimately, they go to regroup at Wang's uncle's house. So back at Wang's uncle's house, Jack is very unpleased with how inconvenient this situation is. He's like, I need my rig, I need my money, and I need to get the fuck up out of here. All of a sudden, Gracie Law, acting fucking white privileged as shit, just bursts into these Asian people's house immediately and tells them all this stuff, acting like she's king bitch up in this motherfucker, and then tells them that
she walked in, she was like, excuse me, latte, small dogs.
Tells them that Wang's girl was taken to the White Tiger for a quick sale, because
fucking would be White Tiger
fucking man, what is it with these Asian gangs and this human trafficking, bro? Like,
you know what it is? It's just there's so many of them that they're like, dude, we gotta traffic some of them through. Let's just move them through.
So Wang asks Jack to help him rescue Miao Ling. I also saw it somewhere that I didn't have it written down, that Miao Ling actually roughly translates to like cat features. Is what it roughly translates to. She has very cat-like features.
Elfin lied.
Now, they have a plan to go and infiltrate the White Tiger. Jack decides to nerd himself up, put on some glasses to infiltrate, and puts on his little dork voice, like, hey, what's going on? I heard you had some pretty girls with green eyes. You can get there. Completely blows his own spot. Like,
really?
He's
selling
in.
It.
Yeah, yeah.
I hate to say that I think he almost becomes the actual character that he was in the movie Used Cars from, like, 78.
Yeah, so oddly enough, I saw a thing that said the actual thing he's wearing is the exact suit he wears in Used Cars. It's the exact suit.
I called
suit.
It because I know Used Cars.
Yeah, it is the exact
suit. I know
same
so many
suit.
Obscure films, I think I'm as good as dead.
Yeah, so. Meanwhile, Gracie goes over in the pouring rain to go into another car, and there's a reporter in there who's going to blow this story wide open. Back to Jack in the White Tiger. He's looking He's looking for a Chinese girl with green eyes. It definitely raises some red flags. Jack starts getting ready to enjoy some good old-fashioned Hong Kong prostitute when all of a sudden...
The madam literally says, she's like, there are no Asian girls with green eyes.
Yeah, you stop being stupid American. I get you anything else horny, though.
Excuse me, I'm looking for someone with marijuana and or drugs. If you could point me in that direction.
Excuse me, I often talk into my shirt and hold it like this when I am doing so. So Jack, just when he's ready, he starts undressing a little bit, and then all of a sudden a green magic cloud forms over the building and it begins to shake, and our magic trio returns.
That shows that the keymaster and the gatekeeper have met on the, yes. on the roof.
I watched that today.
Jack tries to punch one of them in the face to no avail and instantly gets bitched, and then they steal Meow Lin and fly off like fucking Superman, like, on my way to steal your girl, bitch! Like that. So they fly off into the night. And it's an interesting scene. We get to still see this ancient mysticism of the three Raidens coming to do this. They head back to Gracie's office, where we find out the name of them are called the Storms. And Wang decides that he's going to go to the Wing Kong Exchange to get his back his girl. And apparently the Wing Kong Exchange is a very dangerous place. You don't just waltz in there.
Can I give something away about the new Ready Player One movie?
Okay, yeah, it's very topical from what we're talking about. So absolutely, please, let's do that.
In one of the scenes when his girlfriend comes to collect him, she's actually the actual Goro from Mortal Kombat who comes to save him, so with the four arms. So Goro wins.
I respect that.
So can that's cool. Is there any way we can play some sound effects from Raiden from Mortal Kombat?
No, you got the talent. You got to do it. You got to make it. You're the voice guy.
How about if I just do some more Christopher Lambert?
Yes, please. Just do Christopher Lambert as Raiden. That's what I prefer more than anything.
I am Chinese. I am Christopher Lambert.
Would you like some, how you say, sweet and sour pork?
Hey, gang, what's going on? Were we going to eat some dim sum and maybe hang out, play checkers? What are we doing here? We're all Chinese, am I right? High five.
Come along, Tom Cruise. Oh, you're a foreigner as well.
You are my very beautiful... Would you like to have some dim sum with me? I am clearly Asian, in case you didn't know.
Why does it sound like you're Asian Steven Seagal?
Steven Seagal has better acting chops than Christopher fucking Lambert.
It's close.
And I make music as well.
I would, honestly, other than the movie Highlander, I would like to watch Steven Seagal as Death of a Salesman than fucking Christopher Jesus Lambert in Christ. Any film.
Jesus Christ. Funny you should say that. I would like to watch the Three Storms hanging laundry on a line outside. I think that would just be a nice
that would be a better thing better to see. Interaction.
Maybe they're all naked except for the hats. They're just doing their wash.
I would prefer the lead from Raisin in the Sun. So
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, damn. So Wang and Jack come waltzing right in through the front door, pretending to be electricians, saying, hey, where's the box? Is the box back here? We got to go check this thing out. By the way, they're not dressed as the fucking electricians at all. They're just dressed in denim from head to toe. Like, they are, like, fucking, there was a sale at Jordache. Like, it's fucking and real aggressive how they walk in
there. And
they
think electricians are drunk and rude. They come in and they're just loud, like, where's the box? So, yeah, okay.
So, somehow this plan immediately works. They just let them right on through. They took no planning at all. This is like all the planning of, like, fucking Ashley Williams in Ash versus Evil Dead. Like, this would be his plan to get in. And it somehow works. Now, meanwhile...
It's like Alanis Morissette pops her head on the screen and says, isn't it ironic?
Don't you think? Meanwhile, Egg Chen, Wang's uncle, and the others, which include Eddie, his friend, are all formulating a plan against Lo Pan around this time. They explain that Lo Pan is an evil entity pretending to be a human. Wang and Jack discover within the White Tiger that there's a secret elevator that takes them further down. But as they head down, the lights go out, and all of a sudden, they're trapped. The elevator starts to fill with water. They swim out of the... they're able to pry the doors open, and they swim out, and they realize that they're in like an encaged area with a bunch of dead bodies underneath there, which look pretty fucking gnarly. Like, underneath the water, it's pretty creepy. All these fucking half-decayed bodies all fucking rolling around. They get up, they see a cage, and standing above it is one of the storms looking down at them.
Fuck.
They are in fuckedville.
I was very impressed by most of the effects of this film, and I had to look up to see whether Botten had his name on it, but obviously not.
No.
But yeah. Whoever did a damn good job on those zombies in the
water.
I'll
agree with that, yeah.
I mean, the monsters that show up in this movie are actually really fucking awesomely done.
I wouldn't say that.
I like all the
monsters
in this
movie. And there's everything from
movie.
CGI to puppeteering. And
this
like,
is no it's, CGI. It's 86,
there's
girlfriend.
A couple things where they... It looked...
Claymation-y.
Yeah, I think there you're
yeah,
right.
Yeah, well, the little mad ball guy, but yeah. The only weak one I think was the Bigfoot looking guy because his face didn't
do
anything.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
So.
Yeah, but he still looked really cool.
He looked cool as hell.
Well, we'll get to him soon enough. So the storm roughs him up, and they place Wang and Jack in wheelchairs and present him to Lo Pan. Lo Pan comes out as an elderly man, though, in a wheelchair, shaking. Almost looks like he's at death's door. He says that he's David Lo Pan. Lo Pan is actually trapped inside of this old body due to a curse, but he needs a girl with green eyes to have the curse lifted and then rule the universe from beyond the grave.
Or just like an Anna Nicole Smith. Whatever. I mean, I don't care. I'm like 2,000 years old. Just whatever.
I will suck his essence out of his body!
By this time, Gracie, the reporter, Eddie Lee, which was Rank's friend, demand that they want to come into the White Tiger now. So they didn't come up with as good a plan of just walking past the security guards that didn't give a fuck. They decide to go real white on them and start arguing with them. Lo Pan sees this on the TV screen and for some reason infuriates him. Like, how dare you have friends? Like, he's upset that they have friends. It's. I thought it was a little ridiculous.
It's not that he had friends. It's that his friends walked in and immediately asked for the manager.
Yeah. What a dick.
Rude.
Fucking white people.
Right.
Anyway, one of the storms comes up to the door and it says that he will escort the three of them down so they can see it, the establishment. And as soon as they get into the elevator, it fills with noxious gases and the trio is rendered unconscious. Jack and Wang now are trapped inside of a dungeon that is surrounded by skeletons and thick metal walls.
Jack and Wang in a dungeon. Jeremy, what's up? You hard? You sweating?
Jeremy,
what's going on, man?
You get your dick wet over there, yeah, man.
Dungeon.
Hey, yeah, man. You got your dick wet over there, yeah, man.
Just a little on the tip.
So, Wang lays down what he knows, that this may be about an ancient army of the dead that was defeated, and kind of they defeated Lo Pan.
Listen,
it happened
guys,
in 200 BC. It's not a big deal.
A little reluctant to tell you this, but there's some zombies and stuff involved.
Well, spoiler alert, it's about Chinese black magic.
I know I said we were going to like hang out and get pussy, but now we're trapped in this dungeon, and I have to tell you, kind of knew this was coming. My bad. Sorry.
Jack and Wang are able to free themselves from their restraints in the wheelchair. They hear one of the storm guys coming, so they sit back in their chair, pretend to be tied up, and as he walks in to go deposit Eddie into the dungeon with them, Jack pulls a knife and jumps on his back and holds it to his neck. First, he kicks him off real quick, but he jumps back on again. He's like, don't do that a bit again, big man. You don't want to end this. And as he's doing this, all of a sudden... This guy just starts pumping himself up, like sucking in wind, like.
And he makes this sound. It becomes like his sound. Like every time you hear it, you're like, "Oh, it's going down."
Yeah, yeah. And that's thunder. This is the thunder guy
he's like a puffin fish.
Yeah, I like that one guy controls lightning, and the other guy can like jump really high a lot, like this. And this guy can just expand himself a little bit and not particularly get any stronger or do anything. He could just bigger. That's
it. I think his power is beans.
Ed Beans, yes. The musical fruit.
So. To the lion, you will receive courage. And the scarecrow, you will receive strength. And you can just like make your chest big or something. We kind of ran out of eggs.
You work like an inflatable fuck doll. I hope that's okay.
Can I add the lowest part of my marriage?
Mm-hmm.
The lowest part of my marriage is that I found one of my special talents was getting up to go to the bathroom in the night, and just as I get out of bed, I fart. Which
perfect.
Really
kinda, yeah, well, it jostles things loose, and then you gotta let it out.
And that's so bad for marriage, because she could be like completely asleep, but of course, as soon as she notices I'm farting my way out of the bed, she's like, "You son of a bitch.
Have you been pregnant your whole marriage? Because that's like.
I cut back on beans, so it helps out a lot.
I moved to the left slightly and then just farted the alphabet. It was harsh.
Well, let's just say the whole alphabet. Let's just say a lot of farts stay under the blanket now.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, that's a rank smell. The second you pull that blanket off, and it smells like you fucking uncovered. Like it's basically the movie Stand By Me underneath there. Ugh, it's horrible.
My shoulder's cold. I'm just gonna pull this up. Why? Why?
I've actually made my wife throw up from a fart before.
No!
It was good.
Oh my god.
It was that good. I farted near her and she was a little bit tummy upset and she ran to the bathroom and immediately vomited. And I realized I would never have a fart more powerful than that. I mean, after you control somebody's like stomach, I mean, that's better than any weapon.
I have a new respect for you now that I haven't never had before. So. Okay.
Well, thank you. I mean, that's what I was looking for.
And I know
that
might have been a hateful act, but to me, I have more respect for you. So.
I had to really fart. I mean, I really try not to fart around my wife, and it's that I just had that much gas. Anyway, next, we see, he basically expands and then blows Jack off of his back.
Go on.
How can we work Wang into this joke as well?
There's so many dick jokes in this episode. Jack and Wang, like, it's impossible to stop. It's impossible. I have to say them 50 more times through this show. So, Jack then falls backwards into a wheelchair and goes down a giant ramp going like fucking what seems like 50 miles an hour.
He looks scared. He doesn't realize you can stand up.
Yeah, you could just get up out of it.
It's going to keep going. You can just stand.
And it looked like it totally happened by accident.
Yeah. Looks like a total accident, man. And then he ends up going all the way, taking out two guards on the way down, and then hits a well and just stops inches before the chair can tumble down to what would surely be Jack's doom.
Oh, dang.
It was pretty intense, man. Mm-hmm. It was pretty intense.
It's a cliffhanger.
Meanwhile, next we see Lopan leave his crippled body to see his sleeping beauty, Miao Yin.
Wait a second. Is this the one that you see his face?
Yeah, yeah.
And all of a sudden you realize it's totally fake because it's glowing from the inside.
Yeah, it's
and
pretty cool.
And I saw that effect, like, oh my gosh, that's fucking awesome.
It was a really cool effect, like when he goes into ghost mode and you see that cool prosthetic that they lit up like a fucking glow lamp.
Like,
oh, it's so cool.
Like when you think
about it, looks like something you find at Ed Gein's house.
Like, do you think he would get like hell yeah. Do you think he would get like pulled over by a cop for having like illegal lights? Like how those cars have like underrunning lights.
Hey, sir, are those halogens you have underneath your cheekbones, sir?
Like top 10 like Hollywood props. Like most of them would be like T2 Terminator props, but I think number 10 for me has to be Wong's head with that see-through fucking creepy head.
I don't know. You know what I'd love? I'd love to have the fucking melted skull from Raiders. That would be pretty cool.
Mm.
That's probably the coolest effect. I think
the melted remnants of the three Nazis.
Yeah, wouldn't that be cool? Like that would be
one
awesome.
One exploded and the other guy's melted. And it's like just a big pile of crayons. That's you're gonna be your fucking.
I watched a video on how they did that where they basically it was a wax thing that they made and they got it to the perfect heat. He's like he did it once and it was perfect and then they did it the second time and it sucked ass. And he was like, all right, this is the third time. It's got to be perfect this time. And they filmed it just super slow with like a really high paced camera over like an hour. So that one scene that's literally like 1 second long is like hours of that thing melting.
Okay. Cool. Okay. I got like a terrorist plot here, right?
Okay. Okay.
I'm gonna say.
Let's unpack this.
I'm gonna say it'd be worth every day in jail that we spend, but we pick our Madame Tussauds, right? And we fucking get the guys to lock off the doors and everything, and we get these like propane heaters. To heat up Madame Tussauds we can find up to like 200 degrees inside and just fucking
see nope, like every, a whole wax figure museum.
Just get film everyone as they're
like
melting.
It's like the end of House of Wax. That'd be pretty
exactly.
cool.
And I just love to see Oprah melt. So yeah, that's like, a lot of wax.
And it's funny because she already looks like she is melting half the time. So like, I mean, if anything, you're just making it look more realistic. Like the big giant Pizza Hut monster she actually is.
And you like pan down. It's like, oh, look, you're peeing again from the color purple. Oh, so.
Anyway, now meanwhile, Jack and Eddie head back. Jack, Eddie, and Wang run into some Kong. This sounds like the most racist sentence, but these are all real things. Jack, Eddie, and Wang run into some Kong and blow them away in a gunfight.
Everything but
you
the gunfight.
Blow away.
They then make their way to free Gracie the reporter, and they are being guarded by two female Kongs. Wang pretends to hold Eddie hostage with a gun as they cross this bridge. Meanwhile, Jack shimmies his way over underneath the bridge, looking real swole like a fucking ninja warrior style to get behind them. As the ladies approach Wang and Eddie, they all of a sudden pull guns on them, but they're easily disarmed, like instantly. They have guns. They had the drop. They fucking whack them out of their hands, and now they're having a fucking karate fight on the bridge with these bitches. So, they're easily able to best these two women, even though their staffs are putting out fucking noxious fumes that are trying to knock them out. They're able to overcome that, but the reinforcements are coming hot. Some more girls that they have to fight and punch in the face come along. Meanwhile, Jack's working on freeing the girls. By the time he gets the cells open, the reinforcements are there in full effect, and they all start running out of that place. They get to a part where there's a dock and water to a pool. They have no idea where it goes. They dive headfirst in. They don't know if it's like 2 feet or fucking 20 feet. They just jump in then fucking the thunder guy orders all the guards to just rain down hellfire in there. So they're just blasting them away. They're able to access a sewer pipe and swim out of that pool. And all of a sudden, they're on the other side and safe for the time being.
Was it me or was like one of the chicks almost completely naked going through that water?
Well, it's a prostitution ring. I mean, yes, I mean, yeah, there's gonna be some titties.
Yes, Jeremy,
I hope
you saw
adult.
Her butt, okay?
It looks more than butt.
Please, can we get back to talking about Jackson Wang? So I'm being really uncomfortable with the
stop
subject
being immature, Jeremy.
Well, we're getting pretty soon to the Kim Cattrall wet t-shirt part of the movie.
So. Do you remember in Wayne's World where he's like, what does this do? And he's like, I don't know. I've just always wanted to open a door where there's a bunch of guys training for like a James Bond movie. That's just what I think of. Like everyone in this movie was actually in that scene in that movie.
So inside the pipe, Jack and Gracie's sexual tension can be cut with a fucking knife. It's palpable and wet and kind of hot. They then follow this.
It's a big kind of.
Have you ever been in a sewer pipe and be like, man, I'd like to fuck right now?
Yeah.
Like, have you ever just been in that situation?
Also, how did, when they kissed, how did their sharp jawbones not cut each other?
Yes. 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 How did you deal with that fucking chin that was about to dig into you?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So they follow the sewer pipe opening. They climb down to find a large door. Jack instructs everybody to follow him after me. They open it up for 1 second, and literally the whole Kong gang is on the other side. He closes it, and he goes, okay, maybe we're trapped. I truthfully laughed. I laughed at that part.
It's good.
He was just like, so he's like, they only saw me. Everybody else run. Like, yeah, so they don't think everybody else is with you. This is Jack is a total moron.
Yeah.
It's so funny. So he opens the door and he decides to make a stand against the Kong with Wang. And within the first 5 seconds, he shoots like the first five with a gun, and then he runs out of bullets, and then all of a sudden the karate starts. Jack immediately gets taken out of the battle. He can't fight anymore. He's fixing some weapons up while Wang goes out there and literally dismantles like the whole Kong
gang. This happens multiple
karate.
Times in the movie.
Yes. He's completely useless. Wang starts jump kicking people left and right. Jack jumps out after everyone's pretty much knocked out. So there you go. Our hero, Jack Burton, has done, again, not been helpful at all.
Yeah.
He's just a big bumbling moron.
He wore a sleeveless shirt and he's got a lot to say.
Yeah. It's funny. It's like when I look at his character here, he based it more on a John Wayne because he kind of talks like this partner. And, you know, in Escape from New York, he went with Clint Eastwood, where he's more of a badass. And it's funny, like, if we're comparing Carpenter movies, one of my favorites is They Live. Mm-hmm. And in They Live, Roddy Piper seems to be like the marriage of both of these characters. Okay. That Kurt Russell created. Like, he's not only a bumbling idiot, but he's also a badass, right? Like, that's what's really cool about They Live. And I feel like Roddy really embodied the perfect medium between both of these roles. Anyway, I'm getting a little bit too John Carpenter inside. I'm very, very excited.
Showing
about
your
it.
Colors right now, Jesus.
I watch a lot of John Carpenter movies, a big deal. Wait till we get to The Thing and They Live. They Live might be a four-parter. I'm not even...
Oh, my God.
I can't even handle it.
I was wondering when, you know, Captain was getting to use his old pop gun.
Yeah. After that, they are... Okay, the karate starts, there's jump kicking, they make their way to the escape bus outside, but there is a relief statue on the wall watching them. Nobody seems to notice. A hairy hand all of a sudden comes out and grabs Kim Cattrall, and the others make it safely out as they're driving off without Miao Lin and without Gracie. So they actually went in to go rescue one person. They rescued a whole shit ton of people, but lost another person. So the two people that they need the most are still back in there. Meanwhile, which I somehow
classic Wang.
In my notes, I meant to write the word meanwhile. It's spelled in my notes, mean shite. I don't know why it came out like that. We see this dope-ass monster that captured her that looks, we mentioned before, this big hairy monster with kind of a fucked-up face. The best way to describe it, if you've never seen the movie, it looks like, you're familiar with Chewbacca from Star Wars, he's a Wookiee. Mm-hmm. It looks as if Wookiees had their own website of people of Walmart. Okay. This looks like the version of Walmart, like kind of version. It's Jeremy held back.
I call him a drunken werewolf.
A drunken werewolf? Yeah. He looks kind of, he looks like the werewolf from The Howling, but with Down syndrome.
Yeah.
Like, that's.
Like, he needs conditioner and braces.
I'm the retarded werewolf. They let me roam the halls.
I don't find a lot of dates when I'm the Down syndrome werewolf. It's actually really hard. I actually transform on the half moon.
And then he hangs out with the mad ball that floats through.
I transform on the half moon.
Now, Wang and Jack decide to head back via the sewer system to go back and rescue the two ladies. But this time they're going to have the help of Egg and the Chang Sung, basically the good gang. So they're coming with an entourage this time to go back into the White Tiger. Meanwhile, Ghost Lo Pan is talking with Gracie, and he notices that she too has green eyes and may be suitable replacement for Miao Lin. So he decides to open his mouth and show him the light dicks again. Mm-hmm. And then Lo Pan then basically sets up a karate show to show his future brides to be. They basically just says, he's like, hey, these are the storms. Do some karate shit for a couple minutes, like, and just show them the moves.
I mean, I don't know what you know about both 80s dating and Birds of Paradise. But the way it's typically done is the guy shows the lady the goods he's got to give her.
Right.
And then she makes her decision.
Can we mention that the big deleted scene was his video dating? It's like, I am timeless, I am thousands of years old, but I need someone with green eyes that will make me young, and I have three men that are good with electricity and killing thousands of people. Date me this weekend!
And by the way, if you're watching this and you smoke, you need not watch any further. I don't like smoking, and I won't accept it. Thank you.
All that matters is if you have green eyes, you could even be 300 pounds.
So
I am very rapey.
You could have a pair of green eyes in your pocket and bring them. I'm not picky.
As long as you are Asian and have green eyes.
Then one of the Storm members comes over and brings a sword to each of them, and Gracie and Yao grab the sword by the blade and hold it above their heads.
Oh.
And then all of a sudden, basically using the force all between them, the swords start glowing and they raise to the ceiling, holding on to the blade, and then they get to the top. There's like this little orb up there, and they each touch it with their finger. And Lopan goes, "Ah, oh, they have passed the burning blade test and lived. They shall both be my wife." I like, by the way, I mean, how picky are you going to be, Lopan?
Yeah,
I mean,
dude.
this is your screening process? No wonder you haven't fucked in a millennia.
You look worse than Sarah Jessica Parker's labia. So I don't think you get a fucking say.
So, meanwhile, the guys are under the sewer systems, and they're running into some scary shit, yo. A big, giant bug monster all of a sudden comes out of one of the pipes and just eats one of the members of their entourage. Nice. And that thing is fucking really gnarly looking.
And I love how everyone in the scene handles this. They go, let's keep going.
Yeah, he's fucked.
Let's not worry about that.
And
Well, he threw his magic, you know, potion thing and said, "You're not coming out again."
Yeah, right. Egg just says, like, "You can't come out of there." And not in Chinese, by the way. Like, it understands English. He knows it's an English-speaking demon.
And Kurt Russell is speaking for the audience at this point. He's like, "Come out of where? What the fuck was that?" And everybody's like, "Not a big deal."
Yeah, all we're the already moving on. Like, "God, are you not used to the sewer system down here, bro? Like, get your shit together." Next, they find a weird floating head demon that you've mentioned multiple times. And this is probably the fucking coolest, I think, special effect in this movie. Because this is a time before CGI. So this is a practical effect that they made for this film. And it is fucking creepy looking. It's basically just made up of, like, it has like 14 eyeballs, just a big floating blob that's like looking at him. It opens its mouth and there's another eyeball coming out of it. I mean, it's really gross looking. And at the same kind of like you, I want to know what it sounds like if you just threw a quarter at it as hard as you could. Like, it would just sound like that. Like, it would just hit it like
or if it was your pet and you accidentally stepped on it a little and you're like, "Oh my God, I'm sorry."
It feels like it would be like slapping a big thing of Jello. Gross.
I like to think this thing was actually inspired by that Billy Idol song, "Eyes Without a Face." Thank you.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Never mind.
Thank you.
All of a sudden, this thing starts speaking Lopan's words and to Egg Chen. Jack gets mad and just shoots this thing, which is fucking... Finally, Jack, you're taking some initiative. I like that. Let the gun do the talking. Classic American way. Jack then heads towards the main chamber with everyone. Jack can see that this is probably all set up. And then... meanwhile, it shows Lopan. He's basically preparing for a very nice neon wedding setup that's going on downstairs. It's neon, like, everywhere. Like, it's funny that this is, like, all ancient Chinese shit, and then they just, like, "We need neon accents around everything down here." Like,
again, pre-Fast and the Furious.
This is my man cave, okay?
Yeah.
The dragon mouth is good, but needs more neon to accent.
Jack and Wang find another elevator, but before they go down, which is, you know, obviously probably where the wedding is going on, Egg fixes them up some secret potions, and he says, "It makes you stronger, faster, earth, wind, and fire, and all my favorite music is rolled up into this." And they all give a big cheers.
And Lionel Richie.
It gives you the powers of Lionel Richie. And... "Hello, is it me you're looking for? I'm not sure." So they slug them all down. They get packed into the elevator, and they can't stop talking about how great they feel. It's literally an infomercial for dick grower medicine at this point. Like, it's ridiculous. So they walk down, and now the party is officially crashed. The Egg tells the gang to wait until he is married. Then he will be flesh, and we can kill him. But before the ceremony can be completed, the Eyeball Guardian warns Lopan, and Wang stabs it pretty awesomely. Like, he goes over and just stabs this eyeball thing with a sword, and it's like that. It was pretty fucking dope. So all of a sudden, now everyone at the wedding knows that they're there, and fucking chaos ensues.
You weren't invited!
Lopan quickly finishes the marriage ritual, which involves stabbing each of them with a fucking needle, which is pretty wild.
Yeah, dude, how did you get married?
Yeah. I like that you get married the same way that I used to be blood brothers back when we were scared of AIDS, right, where you prick your finger and then you put it in the dirt and rub it all together, because AIDS was a scary thing in the 90s. When we were in fifth grade. So
when you get married, make sure that you don't hand out knitting needles, and then there's the slapping.
Yes.
So.
Yes. You guys never did that, though? Become blood brothers by squeezing blood out into the dirt and then rubbing it together?
Girls don't do stuff like that. We don't. We're not ridiculous. We just have petty grievances we hold against each other for the rest of our lives. We don't do dumb shit, you know?
This is very vile. I mean, we just go hunting together and drink a big old cup of deer blood together. So.
Yeah, well, that's just a Woodworth tradition.
Well, you're sophisticated.
That's different.
You're cultured.
Well... During this whole fight, Jack actually stabs one of these giant stone monsters and then just gets trapped under it. So, again, useless for 80% of this fight. There's karate breaking out everywhere. Wang decides to fight one of the Storm, who I believe is the Rain one. And Rain and him are just doing fucking aerobatics in the air for like 10 minutes, just jumping up and sword fighting each other.
Around this point, and specifically when that started happening, I thought, oh, fuck this movie. And I started to take a nap.
I hate to say that when I first saw the two chicks being held up, that I realized the swords looked exactly like the Green Destiny. And these scenes were almost before Crouching Tiger, Hidden, where they are fighting in the air exactly in the same way when they're flying across together. So, oh, thank you.
During some other segments Wang does get the better of him and sends that guy by throwing his sword into him while he's jumping, and it impales him, and then he goes flying into one of the neon signs and then basically like explodes.
By the power of neon.
Yes, by the power of neon, I compel you. Egg and Lopan have a little magic off during this, where they both shoot purple beam and green beam at each other that actually produce two giant sword samurai guys, and they start sword fighting each other.
Did you notice that they look as if they're fighting, but they're playing with like invisible
joysticks? So Lopan has his hands together and he's like shooting, like touching his middle fingers together only, and then like making like a football goal with it, but then using his thumbs like in the middle, like he's playing a video game of like an imaginary control. It's the most ridiculous thing. Meanwhile, Egg looks like a real sorcerer, just holding a single hand and giving the very tiniest of shakes to it.
It's like if you took the scene from the last Harry Potter movie where Voldemort and Harry shoot their wands at each other and their spirit comes out of it and they're head to head and it's like going really hard. But imagine if that was, this is like the elementary school play version of that.
It's very similar. Very similar.
Oh, gosh.
Now, it ends up being a magic stalemate, and then all of a sudden the lightning guy comes over. He tries to blast him, tries to blast Egg, and Egg all of a sudden just has a fucking metal katana fan and fucking whips it out and fucking blasts it back at him.
Again, Mortal Kombat.
By the way, not how metal works. That's not, metal is a conductor. It doesn't reflect shit back at people. It would go into you. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's completely ridiculous. The lightning guy then zaps the exit as Lopan and the remaining Storm member escape with Yin. So now that they're all trapped in there, Wang dispatches the rain guy, throws him through the wall. Then the werewolf thing grabs Jack out of nowhere, and what is probably, you know, billed as one of the coolest fucking monsters, supposed to be badass, Kim Jong Control just kicks it in the nuts, and then fucking the Wolfman has nards. Wow, that's all it took. They get in the thing.
Have you seen the Mighty Boosh?
Yes, I've seen
the Killer Roo episode.
I haven't seen that part.
He has to fight a kangaroo, and like this kangaroo has like crazy eyes, and it's huge, and it's like it's so good at boxing. And for some reason, you think it hates him specifically. It's never met him, but it's just like all these combinations of like you'd never want to fight this Killer Roo. And this guy is his spirit guide comes through to him while he's half passed out, and you think he's gonna say, you know, pull down and fucking find the fire. No, he's just like, kick him in the balls, mate.
Kick him
just kick
balls.
Him right in the balls.
Put him right in the balls.
Solves all problems.
So,
if I had a thousand more videos to ever see, all I ever want to see is Australian guys punching kangaroos to save their dog.
I love watching a kangaroo boxing match, but we're getting off track. I'm going to keep this. We're gonna power through the rest of this.
We're trying.
So Grace and Jack make it to the elevator, and while they're in there, the sexual tension flies, and they start making out.
Whoa.
Jack ends up with lipstick all over his face.
I love that they left it there. And I really do.
I do like that they left it on his face. Because it just adds to his oafness of being just a big dumb hunk that's going through this world. They roll up on Thunder and Yin and Lo Pan, and they're about to kill Yin to complete the ceremony. Death is part of it. Death do his part. Am I right? Okay.
All right.
Wang comes flipping in out of nowhere, and then Jack and Wang start jacking and Wang and the Thunder Dude and karate fighting
like they do.
And then
wait a second. Are we just going to pass up the beautiful speech that he gives before this fight?
Well, would you like to ad-lib the speech a little bit?
I don't know the speech, but the fact that I had not seen it in so long that he gives his manly speech with that lipstick on his fucking face.
It is pretty funny. I did glance over that part. He gives a very manly speech roughly along the lines of like, well, you know the old thing that Jack Burton says? He goes, who the hell's Jack Burton? Well, that's me, of course.
Me? He gets all mad.
That's me, partner.
Me?
And you know, the only thing that Jack Burton says in a time like this, what the hell? And he punches the guy. It's very anticlimactic, but he has lipstick
it's
on his
so
face.
Great.
It's ridiculous.
This is the ultimate moment where a good guy gives his speech and he's got fucking lipstick on his mouth like a fucking dork. That was probably the best part of the movie, so.
It's a powerful scene. I wouldn't say it's my favorite part. I mean, I liked a lot of other parts of this movie. But yes, it is. It's pretty comical. Definitely check it out. I mean, if you're familiar with the movie, it's
I don't even care about the rest from now on. That's the the rest of can go fuck it. So,
Wang ends up fighting around the corner and taking Thunder into the other room. And now it's Lo Pan facing off with Jack. So Jack picks up his boot knife, throws it at him, completely misses wide right, like not even close to it. And then Wang kind of laughs and goes, you fucking dumb motherfucker. He picks up the knife, looks at it, and goes, goodbye, Jack, and he throws the knife back at him, but calling back to the moment and the thing, the one thing that Jack has is cat-like reflexes. He catches the knife, takes it, and doesn't miss his second opportunity and nails him right in between the eyes, stabs him fucking with the throwing knife. Very similar to exactly how Snake Plissken saved the president in our last episode,
if
Escape
you will,
from New York.
And I will.
So he's apparently... There's two things that I know about Kurt Russell. A, he can throw knives fucking better than anybody that I know in cinema.
He's like a Black Mamba.
It's him and Danny Trejo, okay? Uh-huh. Those are the two best knife throwers
in
all
Danny
of the movies.
Him, Danny Trejo, and all the Hollywood movie editors that made this possible.
Yes.
And Uma Thurman.
Yes. And then, also, he's the best actor when it comes to people wearing eye patches. I mean, he has three
That's
lead roles
fact.
As an eye patch
That's
wearing
he
hero.
He is a one-eyed actor, and I respect him.
Escape from New York, Escape from L.A., and let's not ever forget Captain Ron, okay? Captain Ron, a very underrated
that.
Kurt Russell film. So he picks up the knife, he kills Lo Pan. Thunder comes by and sees that his master's been defeated and starts to expand in epic fashion. I think this is my favorite part of the movie, is watching this guy whose only special power is apparently to become as fat as possible until he gets to the point of pure explosion and blows up a room. So that's what Thunder's thing was. It wasn't that he could make fucking earthquakes. It wasn't that he made loud sounds. He just goes...
That's his cyanide capsule.
Yeah. I mean, if you were going to commit suicide, would you do it that way?
Dude, if I couldn't sleep in as long as I wanted to and had to go to the DMV, I'd do that.
It's just like I felt like when you watch it, you're like, great, now finally a man knows what it's like to be bloated.
right.
You know, it's important to note this week that a guy died from having an air pump up his butt and destroyed his rectum. and died of bleeding from it. So,
well, you know what? People are dying of Tide Pods.
Thank
you, 98
Rock.
I mean, fuck him, you know?
98 Rock gave me that information.
Well,
so.
You know, pump up the jam.
pump up the volume.
I don't know why.
And destroy your rectum.
That's actually what the song Pump Up the Jam was about, in case you didn't know. It was about putting a bug pump in your butthole.
That's
into
what,
you.
That's what inspired salt. Nike pump ups.
Thank you, Salt and Pepper.
So they then they decide to run out, and all of a sudden, lightning is there now. Mr. Lightning is ready to fuck shit up. They start escaping through a hole in the ceiling, jacking people up, jacking Wang up, leaving Jack as the last
fucking
man
gold.
Standing. But he jumps just inches before avoiding lightning, which is the speed of light. he's able to do it and gets through the roof. Then they see Egg. He's up another. He's up even higher to the next level in another hole up there. And he goes, "How did you get up there?" And he goes, "It wasn't easy." And then shoots down a crossbow that has like a grappling hook and a fucking line. And people start slanging their way up. But of course,
3 years before Batman.
3 years before Batman, bro. 3 years before Batman. Now, as they're climbing up. This time, Wang is the last person. Mr. Lightning shows up again, and then all of a sudden, he's shooting up a lightning bolt that makes a Chinese figure. This Chinese character that it forms briefly is translated to Carpenter. Just his own little thing. That's thrown
and at
in
this
there.
Point, I'm still napping.
You're still napping, and that's fine.
You missed a lot.
Egg takes the giant statue and throws it down, killing that the lightning guy with a statue. They're able to escape before the building explodes, and they make it to the truck, and all is well in the world. Everybody has been saved.
A little gunfight as they leave.
And then
there's
they get
a little
gunfight.
A little gunfight with lots of people shooting, and that's pretty
they
much.
They have all the ghosts back in the ghost thing.
Yeah,
and,
in the ghost realm.
They have a black friend
and they,
now,
and they
yeah.
kill the guy from the EPA.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah,
now
who doesn't have a dick?
Yeah.
The ending,
but they have their Wang. Sorry.
So they drive off into the distance. Next, we see them drinking and laughing and having a party here at the end of the movie.
Hoo-wah.
Egg leaves the party saying, "My work here is done. It's time for a long vacation." Eddie and the reporter have a fun interaction. And I maybe think this is one of the most important scenes of the movie that was overlooked. Basically, it goes like this. He goes, "What are you going to call your book?" "I'm not really sure. Maybe you should come in over and help me think about it a little bit." And I clearly think that he went over after this and she pegged him, and that's the story. The name of the article was Big Trouble in Little China.
Jesus.
Was that a reach? No? Did you like
that? I
like
that.
Is that accepted by the judges?
It is Big Trouble in Little China.
I wrote that, and I was just like, that's going to get over real good. I realized we're tired. It's the end of the night.
I think we could have made at least 10 more dick jokes.
And Jack and Grace have a solid goodbye, but just kind of give it away in a handshake. Not a big romantic ending. Jack is off
that.
To his next thing, and it ends with Jack Burton giving his old little speech over the CB radio, because that's what Jack Burton does, and it pans back to the back of the truck, and it's the fucking werewolf thing at the back.
Oh my god.
The retarded werewolf.
And that, my friends, is Big Trouble in Little China.
I've never seen Sex in the City, but I'd like to think every Kim Cattrall scene when she talks about an old love is talking about him. It's from Big Little Trouble in Little China.
No, that's actually, they're in the same universe. That yeah. was yeah. Sarah Jessica Parker actually was in this movie. She played the werewolf in it. In
a little
case
bit
you didn't
of makeup.
Know.
Just didn't
so.
Shave.
No, it was actually, yeah, that, she didn't wear any makeup and didn't shave. It was a very natural
I
want
to like
her.
This movie so bad. I feel like this is the type of movie that someone would take me to thinking, has everything Kim loves. Has everything. It's got Kurt Russell, action, strong females.
Yeah.
But I just, I can't let, I just, there's something about it. I think it's because of the...
horrible script.
Well, the horrible script. It's just the it leans so much on the Asian movie influence, which does a lot of explaining. And if I'm going to watch an action movie, I really don't want to have anything explained to me.
Well, there was. I think it's a fun movie.
It's a fun movie. It's entertaining.
It has lots of cool special effects, cool monsters. Jack is fun. I mean, I probably wish Wang was cast as a different character. I didn't think he was particularly arresting as a person in the movie. I thought Egg is great in the movie. I thought Lopan is great in the movie. I love the fucking three three storm guys. Like, they're all good. But you're right. The script is lacking. Not actually written by John Carpenter. In fact, when the first time before he rewrote it, he said, "This is the most unreadable script I've ever read in my life."
A lot of stuff happening that doesn't move the plot forward.
Yeah.
As much as you may want to, and you're going to want to, because it's very entertaining. Yeah. This is not a movie to go to your friend who's never seen it and gone, "Sit down, we're going to watch this." Yeah. It's not going to feel worth their time.
Yeah.
You're going to get halfway through this and they're going to be like, "This better have a fucking payoff." This isn't, and it doesn't.
It isn't Cabin Boy. I get it. But it's good. I mean, without this movie, do we eventually have a floating cupcake that spits tobacco? I don't think so if we don't have this little eyeball thing.
Eric, can you make a call on this movie between this movie and Teenage Mutant Ninja 2 Secret of the Ooze, which is better? So.
That is a special place in my heart because my daddy took me to go see that movie.
Aww.
Although the fucking werewolf in this looks a lot like the fucking werewolf in Ninja Turtles 2, I'll tell you that much.
Now, what if there was a dance scene with Vanilla Ice in Big Trouble in Little China? Maybe that would have added to it.
It's the greatest movie of all time at that point.
Yes.
So anyway, that is our movie, guys. Thanks for joining us for another week. We really appreciate it. Sticking us in there. Kimberly, where can people find you?
You know, you cucks know where to find me. I'm on Twitter at Watch Me Doing This. I'm on Instagram at Panic at the Deli. And I'm at the Auto Bar the second Saturday of every month for free for the second Saturday shit show.
Free? How can you even make that show free, Kimberly? It's so good.
I don't know.
You can find things all things Eric Comedy at ericcomedy.com. Go check it out. I got all types of murder mysteries and stuff coming out. Definitely mosey your way on down there. Leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes or Stitcher so we can read it on the podcast. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful day or evening whenever you listen to it. Jeremy, take us out.
Attack of the Killer Chickens. I will be in the can by the time this is out. It's funny because I actually slowed it down so it almost sounds legit.
Boo.
Like.